This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello and welcome to the SC Playbook Podcast Draft Special. That's right, back again for another episode, episode two. We've survived the Team List Tuesday cuts. Your host today, myself, Max Bryden, Draft Special, BBL guy. That's probably where you recognize my voice from. Had some fantastic feedback from our last episode, and we're here again today to run through everything NRL Supercoach Draft, hopefully before your drafts in the next couple of weeks. I can't do it all myself, though. And joining me once again, Stevie Hevner. Stevie, how are you going?
Good, thanks, mate. How are you?
Yeah, good, mate. Really good to get some great feedback from the first episode. More than anything, It was good to just sort of pick someone else's brains about draft for a solid hour. And, mate, you've also had a pretty exciting weekend as well, haven't you?
Yeah, we like I said last episode, we came off our draft. We had to go early because the guru and a few of the boys are going to Vegas, luckily. And so we had to go a bit early, which I do not recommend, but still the best weekend in the year for me.
Yeah, nice. Love that, Matt. Well, we're going to dive into any notes that you've got from the draft because we can talk about it all day, but the fact that you've actually gone out and done it is just such valuable experience. We can't wait to share with all of the people who tune in. And on the rest of today's show, we're going to finish off those positional rankings. We've got 2RF, 5'8", CTW, and fullback to go. We're going to give you an overall rankings for the top 20 players. So these are the guys you should be really considering ordering high on your draft boards. We'll go deeper on the website, but we'll do 20 today on the pod. We're going to talk on a few sleepers. So these are guys we expect to drop pretty late in drafts who might present a bit of value or some good players later on. Chat about some of the different strategies to approaching your draft and then get into some listener questions. I think it's going to be a big show, Stevie, so why don't we just jump straight into it, mate. Your draft on the weekend. Now, listeners to the guru, of course, we said this last week, you're in his league that he does a lot of content about. I tuned in this morning. He's gone 50 minutes on every single pick in his draft, and we're not going to go into that detail, mate, but I would love to just get your general thoughts. What were your picks to start with, and what was your overall sentiment on the day?
Yeah, so we drafted on Saturday during the day, so we got a chance to see the Melbourne and Bulldogs trial and also the Indigenous and Maori trial, Maldi trial. It was quite good, but we only got a little bit of a glimpse into those two teams and those players in those two games. So we quite enjoyed the actual day because we were expecting rain. So we got out for a golf game and then we got into the draft, got stuck into draft. And we do a thing where we have to defend our team after we've drafted. So we all get around and sit in front of our team, which is drafted on big butcher's paper. And so I'm used to the defending my players and my picks. But what I've learned over like 12 years is, you know, we've been doing this, 14 of us have been doing this for that long and we're still have a panic pick in us. It's just how you recover. So there's a few things that in hindsight is like, okay, would I do that again? Maybe not, but I guess the majority of my picks, I feel like I'm happy to stand behind them and pretty confident for the boys to get me through the next 7 months.
Yeah, nice, mate. It's a long journey that you go on. It's like almost into kind of, you know, girlfriend territory, such as the length of time that you sort of spend with these people.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. Start off early and really want it. It's funny you say that, the relationship. That's a really good way to put it. The feeling out period, do I like this player or not?
Yeah,
and
that's
then you
it.
Get into the serious commitment stuff towards the finals. Great
100% cuffing season as you get through a nice cold winter. But look, yeah. You know, and just a refresher for people tuning in, you've got quite a big league, 14 man. You've got 17 players as well, 13 on field, 4 on the bench. But you, what pick did you have? And can you walk us through your first three selections?
So I was pick 9 in the 14 man league, and I was wedged in between the guru and another guy that like we pick quite similarly. So I wasn't very happy when I got pick 9, but as it played out, there wasn't too many picks that we snaked from each other. But I went with Dylan Brown. He slipped to pick 9. So I was pretty happy to get Dylan Brown there, considering I feel like the Eels' strength of schedule in round 27 finals is quite good. So very happy to get him there. And then I was a bit worried after 9, there was a bit of a cliff to the next player. Ended up going DCE at pick 10, which I probably wouldn't have been happy to get at pick 10, which I thought was a bit early. A few surprising things in the early pick, early picks. Pappy went pick 5, actually. So very quiet, very high up the draft board. And, you know, again, we got to see that trial and someone might have got a bit too keen on him. But I still think he's round 1. He looked really good in that trial. The only thing I'm worried about is that goal kicking. So he wasn't kicking in that trial. And I still think he's round 1 and he can potentially win you a comp. The other things is Turbo went pick 3, so went before Ponga.
Wow.
And I think that's progressing. Like everyone had a Ponga pick 3, and I would still take pick 3, but Turbo seems to be sliding up that draft board a little bit by how keen people are getting it on him, because he's a genuine game breaker as well. But I would have picked Ponga 3. And I guess the final, I guess, surprising one out of the round 2 is with that injury news of David Fifita. He slipped all the way down to pick 19. So I think that was the biggest movement in our draft. And yeah, I think he'll slip in other drafts. But I will say 19's quite far good back value from David Fifita. Yeah. I know he's injured for 5 weeks, and he can like start off a bit slow, but he could be firing by finals and win you a competition. And if you get a guy of that ceiling in pick 2, pick 19, round 2, pick 19, that's amazing value. I thought that was really good value for the guy that got him. A few of my other picks, I got Dylan Brown 1, and then I paired him with Jerome Hughes 2. I filled out my two half positions pretty quickly. I know we're going to get a strategy a bit later, but I quite like getting a few of my spine players put together early. Mm-hmm. And then I saw Damien Cook on the board, and generally I steer away from hookers, but a pick 42, so round 3 for our league, I just thought he was too good a value there. So I did take him, even though I thought I'd sleep a little bit later on hookers.
Yeah, very interesting, mate. There's some really interesting points there. Pappy, I know I put that question into the WhatsApp group for all the subscribers. It came through asking people if they would take him picks 1 to 10 or picks 11 to 20, and 75% of people said they would take him 11 to 20, even having watched that trial now.
Yeah,
I think, as we all know with Pappy, he's got all the potential in the world. Goal kicking certainly helps. But, you know, as we've seen him come back from injuries in previous years, it's probably what's going on between the years, which is going to be the only thing that seems to hold him back. But for that late in the draft, particularly anyone sort of picking after sort of pick sort of 7, 8, and 9, he's awesome value. So I wouldn't be shocked to see him go in the first round. Very interesting first three picks, mate. And Cook's probably the one that shocks me the most, given Hooker, as we spoke about last week, isn't necessarily the sexiest position. But
no.
Where did you end up picking up a fullback? Who have you got at the back?
Well, that was that was part of the reason why I ended up getting Cook. A lot of the elite fullbacks went, and I thought, oh, I can be patient on these fullbacks and pick up another spine position. So by the time it got around to my third pick, even Gutho was off the board, and any of those even second-tier fullbacks. So, but I did kind of leave it a bit too late to get a fullback. I was eyeing off Buller. He was the last sort of decent fullback on the board. So he went in round 10 to someone that already had a fullback. So they picked him up on his bench, and something I sort of didn't see coming. And maybe I should have just grabbed him when I could, but I didn't see a bench player going around 10. So I ended up actually with someone that I thought was going to get the Raiders fullback, which is Chevy Shewitt. But now now that that trial's gone and we're coming up to team lists again for the second trial, he hasn't been named a fullback. So I got him quite late and I decided to jump on him. And I am going to be a little bit scrambling through this year to try and find a fullback, which is not a great position because those fullbacks can really earn you some good points. But I'm hopeful that I can find something on the waiver wire. And I end up picking up Kinney as my last pick as well, just to help me through those 5 weeks without Campbell.
Yeah, nice. He won't help you with a round two bye, but decent coverage. I hope he can score a few points with the Gold Coast soft draw to start. And of course, you never know that injury from Campbell. It seems to be getting more serious by the day as well.
That's right. Hopefully it can drag on. I hope he comes back firing, but maybe Kinney can get a spot somewhere.
Yeah, nice, mate. No, look, if I were you and I didn't have a fullback until after round 10, I know I'd be pretty stressed, but
yes.
And your league is so deep that these are hopefully challenges that not many people will have to face. I will tell you, though, 12-man, it can also get brutal.
Yes.
Any other sort of sleepers of note in particular that fell in your draft that you sort of wanted to highlight?
So I think this is going to be quite normal, but Teddy slipped to the second round. So the guy that was 13th pick got Grant and Teddy as his first two picks, and if Teddy can get back to some decent form, and you know they look pretty good at the trials, I think those two picks are quite good. You got the number one hooker, and you could potentially have another elite fullback there. The guy that went second got Cleary, Vow, and Gutho as his first three picks.
Wow.
I thought that was one of the best three picks, especially for us, our Cowboys, round 27 Cowboys finals draw is quite good. You're paying Bulldogs in the last round. So to have those three as his first three picks, it's got some serious ceiling.
Yeah, nice, mate. Well, there's some really good stuff and hopefully a few insights for players, particularly if you don't have the time to go out and do a mock draft. Hearing it from the horse's mouth of someone who's been out there and done that. And some invaluable lessons, mate. So thank you so much for sharing.
Very quickly, I will say that, like you said, every draft's different and, you know, our draft went this way and it might go different a little way. But and one more final lesson, I will say that we had a lot of depth in quality to our Fs. So that's something that I thought that, you know, round 10 and 11, so that's, you know, what, pick 140 for us, we're getting Pierre Cora and Lukey and the likes. So I thought there was a quality to our Fs that slept just because people filled up their to our Fs quite quickly.
Yeah, nice, mate. And look, that's a fantastic segue because we're going to get into the positional rankings now.
Nice.
We went through three in last week's episode. So if you missed that, please jump in and have a look. We're going to start actually in that 2RF position as well. And if you missed last week's episode, we're going to be talking about the top 12 at each position. Steve, I'll get your list, mate. And what I'll do is I'll jump in and throw any comments. But 2RF sounds like probably number one is going to be David Fifita. Is that right on your list?
Yeah, he's still at number one. I think he's still great value there. So, and I'd still take him round one, depending on how big your league is. I'll keep going. Do you want me to keep going?
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, power through. I got Britton Nakora at number two. I think I said last week I'm pretty high on Britton Nakora. He was just showing his gameplay abilities, line ball running. Like, I think the Sharks are going to be a quality attacking team. So, just behind him, I have Tino. The only reason I got Tino behind Britton Nakora is just a bit worried about the minutes under Dez. I think he'll be fine, but I just wanted Britton Nakora ahead of him. Number four, I've got Olakuatu. Number five, I've got Patrick Carrigan. Number six, I've got Hopgood. Seven, Katoa. Eight, Murray. Nine, Yo. Ten, Scott Sorensen. 11, Toe Harris. 12, Tyson Frizzell.
Yeah, nice, mate. Interesting list. A few sort of differences for me. I've got Hopgood as high as three. Just thought last year's base was 57. And if he's got the arm free to offload, then sky's the ceiling for him. Average 70 is pretty much a rookie coming
especially
in.
If they run impressive. If they run two hooker rotation, which they have named for the trials, that he's great value there.
Yeah, agree. I think he's pretty good, albeit I'm sort of like you when I kind of evaluate guys like him and Tino. If they're not playing 80, it's something I don't love.
Yeah, I generally like the strike to RFs, the edge back rowers, more than the base stat beast.
Yeah, no, agree. Number nine, I had Sean Lane as well.
Oh, yeah, nice. Yeah.
And then the other guy who sort of crept into my list, I don't have Tohu and I don't have Sorensen as high in the top 12, although they're just outside. It's Ryan Madison. Now,
yeah.
Maddo, for me, is not a guy that I want to own just because a guy who's consistently named off the bench, I think, is just going to give me the kind of stress that I don't want in my life following in my draft team. But you can't really argue with his body of work. He seems to get, you know, 20 points just for stepping on the field and another sort of 40, 50 each time he's out there. We know what his attacking capabilities are like, as well as a ball player who can put players through holes and over for tries.
He's got good upside as well. Yeah.
That's it. Year on year, he seems to sort of get it done. One guy I wanted to kind of highlight because he was a player who started out as a cheapie in Classic last year. He would have gone undrafted in a lot of leagues. Was Ekat from the Melbourne Storm.
That's what you're calling him now?
Yeah, well.
Love that.
I think I got quite familiar with him, having owned him for the end of last season in draft.
Great pickup.
Can't say I got him for the whole season because he was a guy who was originally picked up off waivers. I think he had sort of two or three different owners in our leagues based on some sort of injuries, like an eye injury he had last year where his return to play was sort of unnoted. But what was really good was definitely his combination with Jerome Hughes to finish the season. He averaged about 64 to end the year, and I think that was really sort of scratching the surface of what he can do. If he's on him and Hughes, it's a fantastic stack to own if you are the Hughes owner. And stack for anyone, Steve, you just want to explain that sort of terminology for new draft players?
Yeah, so a stack is when you pair up either just people that play next to each other. It's usually a half and a second rower. It could potentially be a center and a winger, but it's people that play next to each other. They're going to link up a lot on the field. And just quickly, I totally agree with you on Hughes and Katoa. I reckon as they get more and more reps together that they'll start getting better and better and that will translate to super coach output.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And look, that's a stack that I would love to own in any of my draft comps this year if I'm lucky. So the depth at 2RF is fantastic. Like even just looking at my list, I've got Katoa, Lane at 9, Keon at 10. I would probably pretty confidently say that down as far as Ekat at 8, you've got 8 guys at 2RF who are going to average over 65.
Yeah.
And a bunch of guys who can really sort of scratch the surface. Cam Murray is another one who we know can easily get back to a 70. It just sort of comes minutes and attack for him, really.
His average from last year puts him down quite low, but you're right, he could easily bounce back to his 22 average.
Yeah, absolutely. And the good thing is that in general, outside of this top 12, there's still just a lot of quality at the 2RF position. So my strategy with this position is typically I want one of them within my first 4 picks. And I'd love to get one of those top 8 on this list. And then after that, I'm very happy to kind of sit back and then sort of pick up a value player, maybe a Tyson Frizzell, someone like that, even like a Bryce Cartwright, who you know can get you some really sort of steady and consistent scores. One guy I'd love to get your thoughts on, Nat Butcher, a bit of a revelation last year, ended up averaging over 60 and in amidst so much talent in the Roosters pack at 2RF. He seemed to sort of be the only one who was consistently getting 80 minutes. Where did he go in your draft and sort of what do you think he's going to do this season?
Let me look up where he went quickly, but I'll just talk about I'm pretty high on Nat Butcher just because, like you said, there's so many mouths to feed, but I do think even if he pushes into the middle, he's still going to be a 50 average player. So he's the safest pick. So he might not have the upside of some of those more attacking players, but you know, last year showed he can get that upside. And, you know, with Walker back, depending on who he pairs with, he could even go higher than what he scored last year. And, you know, he's not going to push out the team or push into poor minutes because they've got an aging pack. So even if he loses that edge to RF spot to one of those Wongs or Satili, he's still going to be a safe pick. I think he went around 8. I can't find him at the moment, but he went probably where he should have went around the round 7 and 8 mark.
Yeah, nice. No, I think that's probably pretty fair value for him. That's the 2RF. So I want to talk to you about 5/8 now.
Just before we move on, can I just touch on one guy I'm particularly keen on? You said a few boys there that I drafted, so I was very happy to hear that you agreed with Cameron Murray and Bryce Cartwright, which I ended up getting as well. But Patrick Carrigan, he's quite high on my list. He might be a bit low on other people's lists, but one thing I did notice from his average last year, he averaged 83 from round 19 to 26. So, yeah. and the previous rounds, he only averaged 60 and 68. So, he had quite a strong finish to the end. And if he can get to that form, I think he can push up your list a little bit more. Sorry, I just wanted to get him in before.
It's a really good shout. And that's why I've got him as high as number six on my list. I've really put him and Isaiah Yeo in the same category as guys who are playing in teams shooting for a title that really seem to get into their work post Origin 3. Yo's very similar in the sense that, you know, pre-Origin, he'll get you 55, 60 every week, and afterwards it's 70 plus. The coaches seem to really want them fit and firing with 80 minutes and sort of getting into their roles. You know, by the time you're in your Supercoach finals as well, which is really valuable to own. And I've picked up Carrigan in a number of mocks. He's a fantastic player. So, yeah, another I'd be very, totally agree. Very lucky to own if I can get to him.
Yeah, nice.
Let's jump into 5'8", and I want to talk to you before we rank these players a little bit about the strategy here, because for me, this is one of the positions that really can sort of separate out the experienced drafters versus those who are new. Now, I like to evaluate positions, I like to sort of do it on three different categories. So one is ceiling. Like, you know, is this a position where blokes can go over 100? You know, the next is there positional depth? You know, and when we talk about guns, guys who can average over 65, how many people at the position can average over 65? Realistically, when I look at the 5'8 position, there's probably only two, maybe three guys who I can say with any confidence who are going to average over 65. So for me, when I think about this position, if I'm not able to jag one of the top two guys on this list, and I'll let you rattle through yours in a second, then I'm very happy to wait until probably closer to round five and after. And try and find some value later on the draft. Steve, any sort of thoughts on that, mate, before you take us through your top 12 at 5'8"?
Look, it's a little bit boring, but I totally agree with that. If you don't get Brown, Munster or Walker, and that might be your list as well, but you're really getting into quite low scoring positions, and then it's also a low depth position 5'8", but I totally agree with that, that strategy.
Yeah, nice, mate. So how's your top 12 go?
So mine goes Dylan Brown, Cameron Munster. I really think he can bounce back. Cody Walker, another guy that had quite a good start to last year, but sort of flopped with South's falling off a cliff last year. Then I got Dearden, Burden, which I'm a bit iffy on. Jaden Campbell, Jerome Luai at pick 7, Brooks at pick 8, Keary at pick 9. Mam at pick 10, Gamble at pick 11, and Trindle at pick 12.
Yeah, nice. Look, my list is pretty similar. I've got Burton and Dearden round the other way. I've got Burton at number 4 and Dearden at number 5. That's a little bit based on the round 26 final schedule where Dearden will have a bye in 25, and the final schedule for all Cowboys is very, very tough. So that sort of does count against him, even though I do think that he could genuinely push towards that gun category this year. Brooks with his finals draw, I've got as high as number 6. Jaden Campbell, I've got down at number 9, and he's probably sinking by the day just with that injury and the question marks over it. The only other guy that I've got differently is number 12, where I've got Luke Metcalf from the New Zealand Warriors. But realistically, I don't want it that kind of headache of trying to pick from a team where you don't even know about job security. So,
I think he's quite firming into that 12. I wouldn't be unhappy with him at 12, given that he's been named in the trials for week 2. So, but you're right, that job security could be a worry throughout the year with the amount of halves they've got.
Now, one of the things that we've kind of bonded on this preseason has been a debate over Matt Burton, which, you know, this is what draft nuffies do, right?
Yes.
For me, he was a guy in preseason who I was pretty high on, and went so high as having him ranked within the top 20 players overall, thinking that there were a lot of things coming together at the Bulldogs and in his game that were going to push him towards a 65, potentially even 70 average for the season, up from 54 last year, which was quite disappointing. Some of those question marks were, is that left edge, was it going to be Kikau, Crichton, and Josh Adokar? You know, just have all the Ferraris on the same side of the paddock and hopefully run a lot of tries down that side. The other question marks were his halves partner and goal kicking as well. Now, We're getting closer to the answers on a few of these things. Goal kicking, yes, seems to be his. Halves partner seems to be Drew Hutchinson, which he's quite a ball dominant guy. In terms of Crichton as well, it looks like he was going to be over on the right to sort of spread that attack, which for the Bulldogs I don't mind, but for Burton probably does hurt his game as well, just not being able to put him through holes when we're talking about Bronson Cherry, who may take a few rounds to get into the season. So I have cooled a bit on him, but do you have any sort of thoughts? Like, where are you kind of placing him in overall rankings?
Yeah, I was pretty pessimistic on him, and that trial sort of firmed that pessimism. The Drew Hutchinson looked quite dominant. Burton didn't do anything there to really excite me. He does have the potential, but I just can't see it yet in that Bulldogs jersey. And, you know, the few games he had at the Panthers when he played in the halves, maybe that's an outlier. And maybe he's just going to be that guy that's just sort of an average Supercoach player in the round. Averaging, what did he average last year? 57, which is nothing to be sneezed at. But he went in round 3 for us. And I think, in a 14-man league, that's probably where he should go. Maybe even round 4, but that's probably my pessimism showing. So if you're quite high on him, then round 3 is probably a decent pick.
Yeah, nice. Look, I don't have anything further to add on 5/8. Jaden Campbell certainly was an interesting one earlier in seasons, but the knee injuries probably got, for me, down as far as 9. He could be a fantastic late pickup if he is a 60 averaging fullback who's available at 5/8. But with the question marks over it at the moment, it's just hopefully a guy that I can avoid owning in my league unless there's value. And I'm talking picks 90 to 100 plus. If he's still on the board, then I'll strike. But otherwise, don't really want a bar of it. Anything else to add on 5/8?
I will just say that in our draft, people struggled to find a 5/8. And if you're a 12-man lean, like we said at the start, you're going to struggle. Jackson Hastings went at round 12 as a halfback, who averaged 50 last year. And Jaden Sutherland went as a 5/8 in the same round. So I guess that's a match of the half's quality. The 5/8's a lot more shallower. And very quickly, that Kyle Flanagan was looking like he could be a bit of a sleeper, but without the kicking, he's going to be bang average, I reckon.
Yep, no, that's a good call out. Mate, let's get into the center wing right now. This is the sexy position. This is where you're going to see those big scores, the big roller coaster fluctuation of players that you own. We're going to give you 12 right now, or you're going to give me 12. I might give you a couple more, but realistically, if you're serious about nailing your draft, you probably want to be taking your list for center wing is probably as deep as 40, given that most competitions are going to be playing with more than one. And plus, most coaches will want to own 3, 4, 5 of them. So they've got bench players at this position and be rotating them on matchups. Now, much like 2RF, when it comes to center wingers, they really sort of fall in two categories. So the first type are these base. So these guys who have lots of runs, lots of tackle busts, offloads, and sort of week on week, they're not going to score below a 40. Just based on the way that their game plans are drawn up. Like guys that sort of fit that mold. Dane Gagai from last year was immense. Went a 70-plus average. It was pretty much all base power. Brian To'o, of course, the prototype. But even a few sort of sneaky guys like Brian Kelly as well from the Gold Coast with deceptively good base. Then the next guys are really your high upside try scorers. So these are the guys who are going to have those hat tricks against the weaker teams. Bag lots of meat. And I think for me, strategically, when I'm trying to build my teams, which will have two center wingers and some on the bench, I want a mix of both. I don't want all base guys and I don't want all high upside try scoring guys because I want to make sure that I'm matchup proof. Ideally, you know, you can also find guys who can sort of do it in both ways, but isn't always the case because I think there's realistically only about two of them in the entire league. But mate, why don't you talk us through your top 12 CTWs for draft?
Yeah, no, top 12? Yeah, no worries. Let me just get that. So I've got number 1, Greg the Leg Marju. Number 2, Val Holmes. Number 3, Brian To'o. Just quickly, I've only got Brian To'o there because of round 27 finals. So if you're in round 26, he'd probably be number 2 or even number 1 for me. Number 4, Tago. Number 5, Azako. Number 6, Ruben Garrick. Number 7, Manu. Number 8, Lomax. Number 9, Kiraz. And potentially I could move him up a little bit now that Lomax hasn't got any reps at fullback. Number 10, the Hammer. Number 11, Alex Johnson. And number 12, Ronaldo Mulatalo.
Yeah, nice. Nice list, mate. The only two different names that I've got, I don't have Ronaldo or AJ. They're just outside for me.
Okay. Do you have Best?
I do. I've got Bradman Best at number 12, who I'm quite bullish on. He sort of fits the mold of pretty good base for a centre, really going to go below 40. And what I do like about him a lot is that he scored 13 tries last season and 12 of them came when Kalyn Ponga was playing at fullback. He's in that prime real estate, inside number one on my list, which would be Greg Marzu. So I think he's in for a year where he can easily average 60 and could be more if Newcastle really start putting sides to the sword. Mate, wanted to just get your thoughts on a couple of guys here. The first one for me is Ruben Garrick. Now, players who have been playing Supercoach for a few years would know that he is an absolute Rolls-Royce when it comes to centre wing. Often provides that handcuff as well of a guy who can play fullback when Tommy Turbo's injured. Obviously, you know, there's a few question marks around that now, given that they've what Cooler did last year. Regardless, you know, he's always a top one or two on this list, but the move to centre is going to hurt him, but he's still good enough to be a top sort of six or seven sort of pick.
Yeah.
Where did he go in your draft and what would you sort of recommend to people around him this season?
So he went round 2 in my draft and I think that's
way too early.
I think the guy that went in is a little bit too early. He's, like you said, he's pick 6 for me. So he's below, I think those three elite guys are Amaju, Holmes and Toto, and then maybe Tago and Azaiko bordering on that elite, but I'd just have him stepping down. And then the Garrick I'd have a step below. Those guys, just because he's still going to be goal kicking, and we talked about last week how good the Sea Eagles draw is in both round 26 and round 27 finals. But so you still have that guy that could put in, you know, 20 points just in goal kicking if the Sea Eagles run up a score, and there is a chance that, you know, it might not work out, and they go, hey, the centre's not for you. We've only seen him a couple of times. They've got so many outside backs at Sea Eagles that rotating pieces, maybe you take a gamble on that. And I guess the other gamble is if you don't think Turbo's going to get injured and you think Garrick's – sorry, if you do think Turbo's going to get injured and you think Garrick's the next man up, then
straight back to a 70 average, yeah.
That's right, straight back to that average. But I personally would probably take him round 4 onwards, maybe even a little bit under. I don't think he's too dissimilar to, you know, Hammer, who's down at round pick 11 for me, so I wouldn't be – or pick 10 for me, sorry. I wouldn't be going too early on Garrick.
Yeah, no, I agree. I feel like Garrick, Hammer and Lomax probably present the most kind of, you know, what-ifs.
Yeah.
Around the top 12 for me this year. Hammer's a guy who, you know, almost touched 60 with his average last season, and will still play that fullback jersey. And you just got to think that, you know, on everything that he has done, playing for Queensland, that the potential is there for him to be an absolute Supercoach stud. It's just going to be a bit more of that consistency that we want to see from his game. That,
yeah,
maybe that base
right.
Come up a little bit, but you know his try scoring ability is unmatched.
Yeah.
Lomax as well. We've heard the whispers. You know, it's been debated on a million podcasts in terms of will he, won't he play wing or play fullback. If he does stay at wing, you're probably sort of thinking he's going to average 55 to 60 with a solid base, decent work rate. A couple of tries and some goal kicks as well. But if he does move to fullback, that would really sort of bump him up this list as well. I know who took the plunge in your league on him because he spoke about it on his very nationally syndicated podcast this morning. But look, where did you sort of have Lomax on your board and where would you have been happy to take him?
Well, I thought, I hate giving credit, but I thought Guru did well to get him fourth round. I think that's a decent pick. Even if he keeps that wing spot, he's a pretty good center winger, or center or winger anyway. And, you know, moving to winger, you argue, might do more base work. But he's going to be in and around the ball, and that upside of potentially playing fullback in the future, I think he's around 4 easily.
Yeah, nice. And look, the last guy I want to touch on in center wing, because I think with this, again, you'd be lucky to own any of the blokes in the top 12. Maybe you go hard strategically and grab 2 and you become a nightmare matchup if they all fire. But A guy I've had a lot of debates with different people on the internet so far this preseason, such as the joy of talking about draft, is Dane Gagai. Now, Gagai hasn't always been a super coach relevant player.
Yeah.
Typically in this position, he's scored well without being spectacular. But last year, he just really went to another level. His base and power combined, I think, was over 50. And his average was about 71 on the season. And it seemed that everyone was disrespecting those scores every single week, saying, you can't keep it up, you can't keep it up. I bought him in Classic. I owned him in Draft at the end of the year, and he did. He was fantastic, averaging 70 and only scoring 3 tries.
That's crazy.
For the season. That's like second row numbers, basically, for what he did.
But yeah.
People are concerned that that was a statistical outlier. And worried if he can keep it up. Now, my take on it is this. I think that the Newcastle Knights coaches have deliberately modelled their game plan on what's been successful for Penrith, which we know is a lot of runs from the back five when the ball's in your own half, because it gives the forwards an opportunity to have a breather. They've got a lot of big boys and a big forward pack, but I would suggest if you looked into the numbers that the runs from the Newcastle Knights back five would be more than what most clubs are doing. And hence, I think that he can go close to what he did last year and potentially repeat it. But I'm not getting a lot of confidence with that opinion, mate. So where do you sit, Stevie?
I think that, yeah, like you said, there's two ways you can look at it. That he scored 3 tries last year and he's bound to get more tries than that. I firmly do believe that. But I'm a sort of risk-averse guy when it comes to age. So that's when I look at a guy who's 33 and how much workload can he keep up. And, you know, Gagai looked really good in that All-Stars game. But I am nervous that his age, you know, how many reps can he take out of the his back end, carting that ball up. And I generally, when I look at my centre wingers, like you said, you look at the tries they scored last year and the base they got through and their age. So all those three combined, am I going to see upside? And he's a bit of an enigma because he doesn't have many tries, but I'm worried about his age. And so that's why I've just gone, I'd rather be someone else's problem. But if you are high on him, I don't think he's going to really let you down too much. I don't think his base is going to fall through the roof. Fall through the floor. He's just one of those guys. I do look at him and go, oh, I think that I'd rather let someone else deal with that, and I'm not as confident that he can reproduce what he did last year.
Yep, no, fair enough. And I think that's enough on centre wing. I believe on the article on the website we went deeper. We might have gone to 20.
Yeah.
So if you are interested in our opinions on that, head to the SC Playbook website. If you're not a subscriber, that's very easy to do. Give your money over to the great Tim Williams and he will sort you out quick smart for your draft. Now, let's get to the final positional review for our rankings this pre-season. This is fullback. Now, this is the Ferrari position, right? These are probably going to hold, I would say, 3 to 4 of the top 5 scoring players for the entire Supercoach season.
Yeah.
These are the guys who can touch God, as we said. They can go 150 plus, they can go 200. And these are the guys who largely are going to go in the first round as well. This is a fun position to own someone good at, and a position that can really make or break your season, as I hope you don't find out too much, Stevie, with your Keanu Keeney in your main draft league. But can you please run me through your top 12 fullback projections for draft this season?
Very nervous, very nervous. And what you said, like you said, the fullbacks are generally the guys that hold up your team. You get your most points from that. And I think last year, I can't remember what the stat is. It's on the article on the website, but I think it was 3 of the top 5 were fullbacks or something like that. And in a captain's league, that's the guy that you generally captain as well, just quickly to add to that.
Yeah,
so my list is starting off number 1, Kalyn Ponga, 2, Turbo, 3, Trell, and maybe I'm just believing the body I'm looking at, but I do think he can get to that 82 average he had in 2022. I think he had that. 4, Scotty Drinkwater. 5, Walsh. 6, Pappenhausen. 7, Tedesco. 8, Gutho. 9, Edwards. 10, Kennedy. 11, Hammer. 12, CNK.
Yeah, nice. I think that's a really reasonable list. The one guy you may have missed might have been Ruben Garrick, who technically qualifies as a dual. Yeah. And I think you had him above Hammer in your CTW ranking, so he could sort of scrape into that top 12. But mine's pretty similar. I think that's a good list. And obviously, you're probably taking a bit of consideration into round 27 finals. The real only sort of changes for me on that list come in sort of positions 3 to 6, where I've got at number 3 Walsh. Number 4, Luttrell, and number 5, Drinky. Now, Drinky's a really interesting one because if you look at the final system for 26, he's got a bye in round 25, and I think he's got the Melbourne Storm in round 26, which is an absolute nightmare. I think he's got Penrith as well in round 23, or maybe the Broncos. I think it's the Broncos, actually, yeah. So it's a very, very difficult run for finals. So hence, despite his average being incredible last season, I think I've just got him behind those other two. The thing that counts for him, though, is that if you look at positions through all of this list, there are question marks on them all, right? Now, I've owned Tommy Turbo the last two seasons in draft, which is why I'm sitting here without a championship ring on my finger. You know, this is a guy injury prone that typically in years we've avoided and made someone else's problem. Same also goes to Kalen Ponga. Last year, he was like a typical third round pick based on the risk of head knocks. Luttrell. Yeah, he's barely played more than 16 games a season for a number of years.
Yeah.
And Pappenhausen's his injuries are also well documented. But I think that this is also speaks to the position that you've got to take a risk if you really want to be the person who sort of wins your league, don't you?
Yeah, it's funny that I didn't even think about Luttrell with those. I definitely Ponga, Turbo, and Pappy can all win you a championship. Same with Luttrell if he's on, but they all, like you said, have injury issues. The safer picks are Scott Drinkwater and Reece Walsh, who haven't showed any real injury concerns, but that upside you can get in those four guys you mentioned is just worth the risk for me. And like we said, the top 3 or 5 players will be fullbacks outside Hines and Cleary. And if you can pick one of these guys that stays healthy, he can get a ring on your finger and a championship.
Yeah, nice. I think that the fullback position for me has also been one where there's been a lot of movement in preseason. I think Pong has probably been the out-and-out number one since the app opened, really, on Australia Day. But a guy who, for me, has firmed very heavily into number two has been Tommy Turbo. I know you had him in the exact same position, mate. What is it for you why you've got him above the likes of his other contemporaries?
I'm just a Turbo believer. I know, like you said, he's had his injury issues, but just when he's on the field, your team could be awful, and you could just have him get 120 and win you a game. So he can literally carry the rest of the team that you draft, your spuds that you draft, and he can get you a championship just him being on the field. And I'd rather roll the dice on that than go for a lesser player in my eyes.
That's it. I tend to agree as well. There's been obviously those comments that came through on their Instagram about he's, hasn't run this fast for 2 years. The thing for me as an owner last
year, the house down.
Yeah, that's it. For me last year, the thing was he was such a frustrating own because you'd see him get into open space and like hand over the ball or just didn't look very quick, and then you'd look down and you'd be annoyed, and he'd still scored you 80 points.
Yeah,
he's just got such a rare ability. To just accumulate points and stack them up.
It is crazy when you think about it. Like, he doesn't even goal kick and he can just stack all those points up.
Yeah, yeah. No, he can really, really just exploit things that other players can't, I think, just because of his combination of speed but also size as well. Like, he's sort of got that Luttrell tackle busting breakthrough a half gap ability and a top end speed which is also elite for the position, so he's good. And I think that if he's dropping below pick 4 in any draft that you've got, then you'd probably be questioning the decision making capabilities of those top guys.
That's right. And if you're later in the round and you see him there, that's just gold for you. You might have a few people that don't want the risk. I know we've got a few people in our league that have been burnt by Turbo and wouldn't take him in the top 8 picks. So if you're there and willing to roll the dice, that's great value.
Yeah, nice. And look, we didn't touch on this at the start, but strategically with fullback, I was going to say that, the top six of these guys between Ponga, Turbo, Walsh, Latrell, Drinky, and Pappy are all going to be off the board within the first 10 picks.
Yeah.
You're looking at probably Tedesco, Gutherson as well, gone in round two. So that's down in round eight.
Yeah.
Now, if you are a guy who is favoring other positions, halfback, second row, maybe 5/8, you know, within your first handful of picks, how late would you be waiting to jump on some of those guys from nine down, like a Dylan Edwards, like a Garrick, a CNK, or a Kennedy? Would you be leaving that, you know, as late as like around five, around six, or from your experience on the weekend, is this just something that you want to get done in like round three as soon as you can?
Look, if I had my time again, I probably still would do the same thing. I think it was this some guy wanted to take that another fullback on his bench, and I don't think that's common practice. It depends on your league size. So, like you said, that's eight that you've just listed there that in the round one and two fullbacks that are gone. And so if you've got a league size of eight or league size of 10, then you could potentially wait quite late. If I were to learn from my experience, I'd probably, if there's two fullbacks on the board that you, that your last fullbacks that you're willing to take, then take them earlier rather than later. But if there's quite a few people, like you said, like Jaden Campbell, even Buller's still there, Kennedy's still there, like you, I would, it's hard to split those ones, those guys for me. So if you have to, if one goes in round five, and you can focus on other positions, and you can get the guy that you had third on your list out of those three, like Buller, and he goes in round 12, I think that's a much better play in my opinion. So vibe it out, see how many are left. Don't leave yourself too short like I did. But if there's a few left on the board, I would focus, and you think they're very similar, going to have very similar scores, then focus on other positions.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I'm well put. And I think that the only other part about strategy at the fullback position I'd love to touch on is that we mentioned that all of these guys have got injury concerns of some sort over them, right from Ponga down. It is really bringing guys like Hammer into potential round three picks as soon as that, as someone CTW1, just given that him, Garrick, potentially Lomax, if he actually sort of moves there as well, they'll have that dual position, so you can sort of swing them down. So it's good coverage if you're the Turbo owner, the Latrell owner, even the Pappy owner to a lesser extent, although I probably think that most people would handcuff that with a Suafaolongo later in the draft. Yeah. But anyway,
you got to get Fulongo if you get Papenhuyzen. And very quickly before we move on, definitely you always want a fullback that's actually playing that position in NRL in your fullback slot. So I guess that's why I've got Garrick a little bit further down on the fullback list. I'd rather have a fullback, even if they're not as high projected as Garrick, in my fullback slot.
Yep, no, good call out. Now, mate, that is the positional rankings done, which awesome. Is great over the two episodes. And what we're going to do now is talk about our overall top 20. We're going to go deeper than this on the website itself, but just for the interest of time, I'm going to give you my top 20 players this season. I'm going to read them out in increments of five, and then I'll pause and get your comments. But hopefully this will give people an idea of how my pre-draft board is shaping up. And how people might like to arrange their own pre-draft board just so they can spot value in the heat of a draft. So, mate, you ready to go?
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Oh. Awesome. All right. So the first five, number one, Nico Hines, two, Nathan Cleary, three, Kalen Ponga, four, Tom Trbojevic, and five, Reece Walsh. Mate, anything that to call out, anything of note there?
I think that's going to be pretty standard. Maybe Hines and Cleary will switch depending on what final system you're playing. But I think you can't go wrong with either of those two. And I would have the same order. The only one I probably wouldn't, I would have Walsh a bit further back. I just would rather Latrell and Drinky in my situation. But I get Walsh is the better pick in your situation.
Yeah, nice. Well, look, you don't have to wait long to hear those names because yes. In pick number six, I've got Latrell Mitchell, seven, Scott Drinkwater, eight, Dylan Brown, nine, I've got Ryan Pappenhausen, and 10, David Fifita. So anything to call out there?
Yeah, I just wanted to touch on your point. Still having David Fifita around pick 10. I think that's a great play. Like I said, we're focused on the end of the season, not the start. Would you think that people should slip him down the list based on the injuries had?
For me, what I think that for me is already slipping him down the list based on this position. I've got him at 10th. I think I've had him as high as number 8 or 7 in some iterations of this. As you said,
great.
Yeah, best of position. It's an important position to nail if you want to win your league. Probably for me more important than 5/8, where you'd hope to get some value later on, or hooker as well, which is why I haven't mentioned Grant yet.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's why I've got him at 10th.
Yeah. No, that's where I'd probably have him as well.
Nice. Okay, so number 11, I've got Sean Johnson. Number 12, Harry Grant. 13, Cameron Munster. 14, Brian To'o. And 15, Greg Marzu.
Yeah, so like you said, we've touched on it a few times. Depending on what system you're playing, I think that's perfect for round 26. That's the same I would have around for finals 26, I should say. The only thing is, if you are particularly higher on To'o and Marzu, I think it's really hard to split them. So whatever you're vibing there.
Yeah, that's it. I think I have flicked both of them around a lot.
Yeah.
Brian To'o is one of those guys that, as well as he scores, I don't think he's quite as fun to own as Big Greg.
Yeah.
There is a little bit of chat around if it's a captain's, non-captain's, what's the better decision.
Yeah.
To'o's probably less likely to have scores under 50, but Greg's probably more likely to score 120.
That's right. I totally agree.
Just based that, Penrith seemed to put the sword away once teams are sort of quite wounded. So
As someone that owned Marzu, it was so much fun because, the Knights go left all the time, and compared to Penrith, where they spread it around a little bit more, you're just always on the edge of your seat thinking Greg's going to go over.
Yeah, no, that's it. And as someone who did draft Greg Marzu last year in about round 7 and then dropped him to waivers when Kalen Ponga got hurt.
No.
I don't want to talk about it.
Oh no. Mate, you need to redeem yourself.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. That's why he's high on this list now.
Yeah.
Getting into number 16 to 20 now. 16, I've got Daly Cherry Evans. I love his finals draw. 17, James Tedesco. 18, I've got Jerome Hughes. 19, Tino Fa'asulomala'awi. And at 20, I've got Payne Haas. Anything you'd change there?
I will say that Haas is probably a good pick for a non-captains. Potentially, you could slip him a bit further down if you're playing a captain's league. But not too much further. He's still going to be the best front rower, I think. And, I know you got Tino a bit earlier, but I assume you've got him there because he's dual factor and he's a bit of an upside player.
Yeah, that's it. Like, I do like his dual. I think he just seems to score more tries and have attack. But realistically, both of these guys could be as high as, pick sort of 13, 14.
Yeah.
But as I've said a couple of times on this podcast, I don't love anyone who won't be guaranteed to play 80 minutes.
Yeah.
Just because things happen, and these are also the first two guys who were put back in the garage when they've put teams away. So that's just another thing to sort of think about as well.
Sorry, where did you say you had Jerome Hughes as well?
Jerome Hughes I've got at 18. Okay, so I've got him as about the fourth or fifth best halfback behind DCE and Sean Johnson.
Yeah, that's similar to me. I had him at 15. 16. So a little bit ahead, but that's just because I believe in him and Katoa to rise up together. But he's behind DCE for me as well.
Yep. And I'm a big Hughes guy as well. I owned him last year, and I'd love to own him again this season as well.
Yeah.
Having a quick look at my board. Now, I won't go into the many sort of details, but like the next three names that I've got just outside my top 20 are all centre wingers.
Yeah.
Guys with a bit of base, a bit of upside, a couple of fullbacks, and getting to Cody Walker as the third 5'8". The only other thing really of note, there's a bunch of 2RFs as well. Your mate, Britton Nakora.
Yeah.
Is I've got Mitch Moses, rather. I'm thinking cricket on the mind. 26. Now, he's traditionally been a bit of an enigma in Supercoach. He can either go really, really big or really, really low. But the round 26 draw for para finals is tough.
Yeah.
And he's I really don't want him to be my problem. Which is the only reason he's dropped outside the top 20. But
I'm a bit of a Moses believer. Maybe it's just because of my round 27 finals, but even round 26, I do think yes, he's got those lower scores, but I think he's shaping as a player that's going to have more consistent scores and that goal kicking. And he averaged 68 last year and 70 the year before. I don't think those. If he was able to do between 68 and 70, I'd love that for round 20 for 2024.
Yeah, and look, it's fair enough too because he does have a decent floor with the goal kicking and make a fair amount of tackles. But I've seen him score 20 too many times.
Yeah,
having said that as well, Parramatta, like the way that they put away Melbourne Storm. Regularly, yeah, like they could easily come out during that period and smash all of those games. I wouldn't be shocked, but.
Nah, anyway, not after that Raiders trials loss on the weekend. They were going to be shattered after that. So
yeah, true. Good call. Look, that's the top 20. That's my top 20. Thanks for your feedback as well. And as we said, we'll go into more detail on the website. Any subscribers as well, if you've got questions, you're doing your pre-draft rankings, give us a shout out in the WhatsApp and we're very happy to answer your questions ahead of your big draft day. We're in the home stretch now, mate. The final section before we get to the listener Q&A is about sleepers. Now, for any people who are new to draft, do you just want to explain what the notion is of a sleeper?
For me, a sleeper is someone that is quite far down people's pre-draft lists. So they might have gone poorly the year before and their average from the year before means that they're quite far down a pre-draft list. So, in year 2024, they're going to bounce back and jump up their average from last year, whether that be from injury or position change or minutes. That's what I think a sleeper is in my mind.
Yeah, nice. No, I think that's a good definition. And obviously, when it comes to some of the biggest stars of our game, the improvement's pretty obvious, right? Like you think about guys like Ryan Papenhuyzen, whose last year's average is going to be nowhere near where you're going to take him on a pre-draft board. But this section is really designed to talk about going deep on the draft and these guys that you're going to be taking after pick 100, most likely, could present a bit of value in some trickier positions on there. So, Stevie, why don't you jump out and throw a few names that you'd like to sort of shed out as sleepers for people to keep an eye on?
Yeah. So the first few guys I'll just talk about just mainly I consider them sleepers based on what they're being named on in the first two trials and the positions they've played in the trial. So I think they've got some value, especially if people have already done their pre-draft lists. So Arrow getting the edge role for South Sydney is huge, I think. I think that's a much better position than a front row forward rotation. If he can get 80 minutes on the edge, I think there's value in getting him much better than, I think he had a 48 average last year off the top of the dome. The other one is Kane Radley. Looks like he's going to potentially get that spot at Melbourne Storm ahead of Sean Moore.
Yep.
There'll be job security issues there, but, he jumps up to your draft board. Satili looked really good for the Roosters. I think I would probably, I think people might go Wong and Angus ahead of him, but I think there's a chance Satili gets either edge row or even a decent front row forward rotation with what he was playing like on the trials. And then the last one there is Aitken. I know he's a little bit down my list of those guys, but he has been named on the edge. And if you can get an edge back row playing 80 minutes in your CTW, he's a decent third or fourth centre winger. You still want those upside guys, but he'd be great to have as your base.
Yeah, look, he's a guy I've owned in many occasions over the years. Ewan Aitken always will do a job. The only concern I have over him is just the sheer amount of forwards they've got at the Dolphins. Yeah. And I think the fact that Connolly Lemuelu maybe returning from injury.
Yeah, there is a bit of a question mark, but I guess and you know there is a risk that he doesn't even get a spot at all because now they've got heaps of centers as well. So
I don't think his days in the centers are well and truly numbered now.
Yes,
given that it looks like Jake Avarillo can't even make that team.
Yeah. Very quickly, and then two guys that I think are just going to, I think it's been said over so many podcasts around Max King and Carouse and all those guys. There's two guys that I don't think have been spoken about that much is Sione Katoa for the Sharks, and he averaged, I think it was 48 last year.
Yeah, about 48.
Yeah, 48. And the years before that, he's pretty consistent and averaged 60. So I think there's a decent improvement in him. I think he'll get back to that 60. He won't be a 48 average player. And then Oates as well had a horror run last year. I think he played like 3 or 4 games, looking very fit. And you can get him decently late based on where he's in the pre-draft list.
Yeah, good shout. There's certainly two guys I've got on my mind at center wing. Katoa's an interesting one. I've got a lot of mates who are Sharks fans and haven't ever really been able to explain to me why he fell off a cliff last year.
Yeah, and he wasn't injury affected or anything. Like, when I look at it,
That we know of.
Yeah, that we know of.
Maybe that's
true.
That could be where the issue lies because in the past he's had decent base.
Yeah.
But you know, even Ronaldo sort of seemed to be picking up more runs last year for the Sharks. So, yeah.
I just think that, like, you know, I've said it a few times, Nakora's working on his game playing ability as well. I think he's got more attribute there. He's on hindsight. He's got to go way better than 48. I think high 55 would be his floor.
Yeah, I agree. And without sort of trying to muddy the waters too much into Tim Williams' world, bit of a sneaky one for Classic as well.
Hey, we don't talk about Classic here.
No, we don't. This is draft only.
Yeah.
Look, getting into my sleepers, man, I agree with everyone that you've mentioned on your list. That Kane Bradley from the Storms, interesting one. Did play a couple of years at the Tigers in reserve grade, so a name I'm familiar with.
Storm are going to turn him into a quality back rower after
the Tigers. Just like him and Blaw like that. But, you know, you still got Jack Howarth somewhere in the cupboard there, wanting to sort of get his opportunity. But a guy who I really like, if you're in a lot of trouble at halfback, is Tanner Boyd from the Gold Coast. Now, last year, I think he averaged in the mid to high 40s, just basically off the back that he's a really good tackler and he kicks goals for a high-scoring team. Where I see potential for him to outscore that average is the fact that he's finally got some edge partners now who are really quality footballers. He's either going to be playing alongside at 2RF David Fifita, who you think is going to be on the left, but really it's a coin flip what Desi's going to do, or Bo Furmore, who's a really, really quality player. And plus he's got AJ Brimson as his centre partner. So Boyd is a guy who I think could present value late in drafts. People probably not going to be looking his direction just based on name alone. I'm not suggesting he's going to push into the top 12 halfbacks at all, but I think he could do a lot worse than find him. And I think that he could average at least 50, potentially up to 55 as well, just with those sort of improvements to the Gold Coast Titans.
I really like that, and especially like, you know, there is a world, like you said, there's a world where Fifita could play with him, and that could, you know, he could get 10 points just from Fifita outside of him in his average.
Oh, it'd be more than that. If Fifita goes to that edge, it'd be 15 to 20 a game. Yeah. I mean, with the amount of line breaks that he makes. And I think that, you know, that was the whole narrative last preseason was that they were best mates from high school.
Yeah, yeah.
The Keeper boys. So.
Fifita, Bo Furmer that made them switch. That was the story that came out. Yeah.
Exactly right. The next guy on my list, and again, I think this is also the beauty of drafting late rather than sort of too early, is Inari Tuala. Now, he, according to the Knights guru, Barry Tui, seems to have won the race for that right wing spot that Dom Young vacated. And look, it's really good real estate. We saw it again on the weekend in the trial. I think it was David Armstrong, a player that only Knights diehard fans knew. He scored 2 and set up 1. So the right winger at Knights, for me, presents a bit of value. He's not necessarily a player that you want to play every single week. I don't know if his base stats are going to be good enough that's bankable. But
he based 25 last year, but you know, I think he could potentially push up into the high 30s with his runs for just a base. He's not going to be a horrible guy to let you down with his floor.
Yeah, no, he's certainly got some potential there, and I think that what I also like about the fact that he's going to get that wing is that it's probably going to mean more run for Dane Gagai, just given that Tuala's not a noted carrier out of his own end. So I think Dane will probably be putting his hands up to do more of that tough stuff. So yeah. I love that. A third guy, and this is certainly my Tigers bias coming through, but I don't mind Stafford Toa. Now, he's a guy who's probably going to go undrafted in most leagues, but he averaged 49 last year. You take out that time he gave Valentine Holmes an absolute bath at Leichhardt Oval, a.k.a. the eighth wonder, a.k.a. the greatest night of my entire life. But he's got really good base. Every time he runs, he breaks tackles. He's got offloads in his game. So he's a really sneaky one who I think can sort of push towards a 55 average, and he's fairly consistent as well. Might not have like a heap of tries or huge sort of games, but I do like him as a guy that I don't think anyone's looking at, particularly with that Tigers round one bye. That does rule them out for a lot of people, as does the round 26 grand final. But he's probably going to present value in your draft.
My only worry of him is his job security. Is he injured at the moment? Is that why he hasn't played?
Okay. He's fine. He's been named to play in the Tigers trial this weekend. And like on potential alone, he is light years ahead of any of the guys coming through. Like Brent Naden can, you know, he can go back to the Bulldogs for all. I'm concerned. I feel the jobs is him and Ollams. So, and even Asu Kapoa, he's now a second rower these days. So, I think he's safe, and I think he's a really, really good player.
I won't find the Tiger supporter on that.
No, he gets wise. And look, the final guy, this is a guy who I think draft people have been really sort of keeping an eye on, but Adam Elliott. Now, last year he was really injured to start the season. I think he had an Achilles issue or an ankle issue that he went into the season with. He aggravated in round one, and then we didn't see him until sort of round 12 or 13. And also, just that's given me flashbacks to the fact that I did draft him last year as well, I think off the advice of maybe Guru, that he was a really solid player. But he's a guy who you'd expect to take that starting lock position for the Newcastle Knights and finish the season really, really well, sort of showed that potential. And he's a guy who can easily average 55 to 60 at 2RF. He's not going to, again, score you big tries and sort of go 80, 100 plus, but a really reliable scorer who, you know, loves tucking under his arm. And running and sort of, you know, running backwards into tackles and sort of offloading and stuff like that. So Elliot, I've typically taken him in mocks, picks, you know, 110 plus, and he's sort of there fairly consistently. I think his average last year was only sort of 50, so he's falling sort of pretty low. But I do really like him if you can grab him really late in your draft.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think we just chatted a bit off air, and we both sort of revealed our hands that like, he's one guy that we're super keen on. Like you said, that injury, him being an ex-Raider as well, and showed a lot of love to the club, also ticks a little bit more, a few more boxes for me as well. He's just a keener. He just loves work.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. I honestly thought he didn't really sort of suit the Knights' attack.
Yeah.
Given that they are such a lateral team, and he just, like, in so many runs, he's either passing way before the line without really sort of engaging it or just sort of tucking it under his arm and taking it up. But for whatever reason, it worked. They scored lots of points when he was on the field, and I think he can have a good season if he stays fit, which I hope he can do. Nice. So we're getting into the final stretch now, and I'm going to merge the next two sections. We've got a bit of a list of Q&A that has come in, but one of the questions from Will, one of the SC Playbook subscribers, has asked that in the chat we've been discussing a bunch of different strategies for how to actually approach a draft, the types of players you want to target, how you want to sort of organize yourself. I've given four strategies that I've used in the past, and Will has asked what is the best one. So we're going to have a bit of a chat and pick your mind, Steve, the draft expert, 12 years of experience on the best way to approach your draft. So what we'll do first and foremost is we're going to talk through a couple of these different strategies that you can take to approach them. And I think that the overarching message I want people to take away from this is that there isn't one right way to do draft, because not everybody in the league can chase the same strategy. And the facts are that if everyone is chasing the same strategy, then it's going to create value in another position that other people are ignoring. So I want everyone to sort of keep that in mind as we run through these. But the first one to talk through is a bit of a classic of the genre. It's one that I have done more often than not. And it is focusing your first three picks on some crucial positions, which are fullback, halfback, and 2RF. Stevie, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, this is like you. This is generally the one I stick with. We've talked about in this episode how important fullback is, those high upside 2RFs, and you know those quality elite halfbacks. They're going to get you a lot of points, so that's why I feel like that's a priority for me. And this is generally the one I stick to. And like you said at the start, not everyone can do this approach because it's going to create value elsewhere. But this is the one I prefer to go with if I can.
Yeah, nice. And look, I've tested doing this in different sort of ways around getting a 2RF first and or getting a halfback first and then into a fullback and things like that. And every time I do this in mocks, I'm genuinely more happy with my final team than I am. And look, some of the things that have happened, and look, I think the other thing with this strategy is that this is really good for if you're either like a top four pick within a 12-man league or like potentially even like a bottom four pick in a 12-man league. There are positions in that top 10 where you're going to be faced with a decision to either take potentially it's a Dylan Brown or a Pappenhausen or a Cameron Munster, a David Fifita or a Harry Grant. And you could be looking at the strategy saying, I've got to divert from this. And that's fine too. I've just found that typically whenever I deviate from this by either taking one of those high-value hookers or a 5/8, I feel too weak in one of those crucial positions of either fullback or halfback. And it doesn't make me as happy. But that's not to say that there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah, and even if you do deviate and you know you see value in Fifita or Grant or like those people that you said, you can just come back and try and fill those other positions after you've done that, found that value as well. If you feel more comfortable, which I generally do, find some value elsewhere, then come back to it.
Yeah, no, good shout. I should say that underpinning that strategy is like a very conscious decision to ignore front row forward altogether until basically like your final pick of the draft or close to it, which does mean that, you know, you can always still sort of fill those other crucial positions on there before you get some plotter who's going to get you between sort of 40 and 50. The next strategy is really the stack your pack, and this is where we talk about aiming for those big boys, your 2RFs, maybe your front row forwards, those guys who can really score consistently for you week on week. They might not have the ceiling, but they're definitely not going to have the floor. This is one that a lot of non-captainers leagues can sort of think about. So what are your thoughts on this, Steve?
Personally, this is probably the one I use the least. Probably 8 years ago, I used this one as my main one when you had the likes of Sean Fensom, Gallen and Corey Parker running around the field. And, you know, Supercoach was generally a little bit more prioritized to those stack the pack strategy. I feel like we're moving a little bit more away from that. Maybe it's just my feel. I generally avoid this one just because, yes, you can get consistent guys in the pack, but I can also get pretty consistent guys that aren't too far off the elite guys further back in the draft. Like, you know, later rounds, I can get a front row forward that's not too far off. Yes, it's not going to be Payne Haas, but it's not going to be too far off Junior Paulo, who's probably the third front row forward or fourth front row forward.
Yeah, no, well put. I would say that this strategy is really, really good for getting league wins head-to-head week on week.
Yeah.
But where it can fall down is finals, given that your pack are generally not the guys with the big ceiling who are going to go sort of 90, you know, 20 or 30 points above their average, you know, for 4 weeks in a row when they're scoring tries. Apart from that, like I generally find there's at least one or two people in the league who are doing this strategy, making it to finals and taking it pretty deep. It's just for me not as appealing as the first one. The next one, Stevie, is the all spine, really. So just filling up your spine and prioritizing your spine positions. And this is a really interesting one because there's always two schools of thought. Like we already spoke about the hooker position and the fact that there might only be three blokes who average over 65. But that sometimes that can mean that you can ignore it until late and find value in the draft. But sometimes it means that you should go early.
Yeah, that's right.
Get one of those guys and then have a 20-point head start on everyone else in the league because you own a position that's got rare upside. So what do you think about building your spine first as a strategy?
I don't mind this one as well. Like I think this is probably my second most used behind that fullback, halfback, 2RF priority. It's just, it's I call it, it's basically a Panadol solution to any headaches that you're going to have later on. There's nothing worse than being midway through the year and going through the waivers trying to find a fullback or halfback or 5'8 or hooker, and you're just constantly rotating through them week on week. You can't find a dude that can get your 40s. And then this just saves a lot of headaches, and you generally get a guy that's going to be there the whole year, and you're not going to have to change at all. And they've got some high ceiling, some of those spine players as well.
Mm. Yeah, no, they do. I think that this is a strategy I really like in, say, 6 to 8 man leagues, where teams in general are just going to be more stacked. But yeah, if you're the person who can own the best player or a top two player at each of those spine positions, it gives you such a natural advantage week on week against your competitors. In deeper drafts, like 12 or 14 man, I think that there's potentially like a mix. But again, someone's always going to do this strategy in each competition. And it's not a bad one by any stretch. And the final approach that you can take is chase ceiling. And this is the guy that I hate versing week on week in head-to-head, because you're going to lose sleep if you're coming up against the owner of Ronaldo Mulatalo, Alex Johnston, you know, these guys who can any week go 100+ with you know, a hat-trick of tries. This is a really stressful one to come up against, where you probably sacrifice consistency by targeting guys typically in your backs, but typically with really, really high upside and sort of lower consistency in your league. So what do you think about this one, Stevie?
I think you put it the best, that this is the strategy that, like, and I tend that you can apply this to, or you know, every pick that you make. Are you choosing a consistent base guy, or are you chasing that ceiling? So, but particularly in those first picks, if you're got a scary team, I tend to like this strategy, because it means you're a chance of winning finals. If you've got that guy, that four first pick that can go 120, and all of them can do that, it's scary. And, you know, like you said, when you come up with opposition that has that, you can lose sleep. And it's one of those things that you always want to have the guy that people are most scared of. So I tend to like this strategy quite a bit as well. So, and you know, for a captain's league, this is probably a no-brainer to use this one in varying spots in the draft. And even in those first four picks, definitely you wanted to chase that ceiling.
Yeah, nice. And I think it's well put. And like, to sort of put a practical example to this, the ceiling chaser is going to have absolutely no hesitation in reaching into the late first round to get a Greg Marzu.
Yeah.
And potentially like a Val Holmes in round two, you know, before they get to, you know, their halfback, their 5'8", these positions where they're just probably looking for consistency. This is going to be the guy who probably owns Drew Hutchinson.
That's,
you know,
right,
in his halves all season, or a Tanner Boyd, just for like a consistent score that can come in, and he's going to be looking at his matchups and either, you know, entering the weekend saying, well, I don't care, or, you know, I'm gonna knock over the champion with this. You know, this is the Bazball approach, right? You know, and the beautiful thing about Bazball is that, you know, if you win, you're doing something revolutionary and different. And if you lose, it's everyone else's fault.
Yeah. So, and you're chasing that ceiling over anything else. And that means ignoring injury sometimes as well. So the ceiling guy is going to chase that turbo, that puppy, and the consistent guy with Harry Grant and, you know, Payne Haas might get him on a really, it might get that puppy and turbo owner on a really bad week and could win it. But the other guy might be a bit more consistent.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, good chat, mate. That's four approaches. Was there any other approaches that you sort of wanted to call out? I just wanted to sort of have a final note on this.
I just, like you said at the start, that I think that's all the approaches you can really take, but being flexible in how you draft is really key. And it's a fine art. So you just got to try and not panic and look for value when you can. And, you know, try and enjoy whatever strategy you take. Just try and stick to it as well.
Yeah, no, look, 100%. I think you said it really well. And for me, what's the most important thing around all of these strategies is having a pre-draft board that is as organized as you can make it, with your players ranked probably as far back as 100, and maybe even further if you've got the time. Because while you can start going down one path, what you can't ignore on draft day is value. And if you're sitting there with a pick in the 50s, seeing a guy that you think could go as high as 20 or 30 available on the draft board, and he's at a position that potentially you were going to deprioritize, just say it's hooker, you know, then that is when you can pounce and get a real advantage over your league. And Stevie, that sounds like what unfolded for you with Damien Cook in your league, and probably why you're sitting here with a bit of a smile on your face, not too stressed about the rest of your team.
Yeah, I mean, ideally, I wanted that fullback, halfback, 2RF in my first three picks, but just the way it worked out, I ended up going for that spine play, and yeah, I know he's just going to do a job for me all year. I'm not going to have to worry about him.
Yeah, nice. Awesome. All right. Well, that's our strategy chat. And of course, any questions from the subscribers, please jump into the WhatsApp. And we're going to finish today with a couple of listener questions which have come in. The first one actually relates to that strategy chat. It's from Braden, and he says, so with those four draft methods of them, what do we think are the best ones for non-captain's leagues, and which is the best for a captain's league? Stevie, what do you think?
I think we touched on it just there, but I think that chasing that ceiling is key in a captain's league. I'll mix between that and the fullback and the halfback to RF priority. I think those are the two strategies I generally try to employ in a captain's league.
That's it. And non-captain's league, I really think any of them can work.
Yeah.
I would say that it sort of depends, I guess, on your risk appetite. If you're chasing ceiling, it's going to be a roller coaster for your whole team. It's going to be up and down. You're going to have some big wins and you're going to have some huge losses as well. You're stacking your pack and start filling your spine first is probably where you're going to get your most consistent scores. And in that instance, you're never really playing the opposition. You're really just sort of playing against yourself. And if you can sort of get to that, you know, a good average score each week, you're going to win more than you're not.
Yeah, and there's likelihood that you finish, you know, top one or two over the ladder in that non-captain's league, but that's still that scary ceiling guy, and the other strategies could beat you in the finals.
Yeah, absolutely. Next question is from Will, and he asks, so if we miss out on Grant, which I assume means that he's probably a, sort of a late first-round pick, how highly should we rate the great man Apisai Korosau from the West Tigers with his goal kicking? This is a really interesting one because I think for me, I had him probably sort of picks 115 to 120 plus as like a value guy you can pick up later in the draft. But how high would you take him now, Stevie, knowing what you know?
I was pretty keen on him as we discussed last episode, but even now, I think I'd take him around three or four, and he's probably my third hooker. I'd probably still go Grant, JMK, and now Appy over Cook, given what we know. I know there's a chance he gets subbed for Simpkin or another hooker, and there's also a chance that the Tigers don't score too many points for him to kick goals, but I still think he's going to be the main dude, and he's got goal kicking as well.
Yeah, nice. No, well put. I think for me personally, just because I don't really like the hooker position that much, I probably wouldn't take him ahead of maybe pick sort of 80, maybe 70s. But that also, again, just comes down to sort of my thoughts or preferences for the position. But,
that's fair.
Hey, he's a Tiger, so I don't hate it.
You might get the rush of blood.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That orange tends to do it. I think the only thing to sort of keep in mind with the Tigers, again, if you're playing around 26 grand final, you want to have them that week because they're on the bye, and that's probably what's stopping me from bumping him up until the 60s. And the final question, this is from Krusty, and he has asked, when we're evaluating our talent, when we're looking at our top 30s, how do we split the gun center wingers and the gun to RF? So, comparisons he's given are like Olakau'atu and Valentine Holmes, Decora, Dane Gagai. So what are we sort of thinking about in terms of the way to split your center wingers and your two RFs when your pre-draft board?
Yeah. I think for me it works well with like having my Rain Man spreadsheet. Like I said last episode, I have all the players on a spreadsheet and I look at their averages from last year and what I think they're going to average this year. And you can start to see a bit of a gap. I know not everyone's going to go into that much effort, but if you just look at their averages from last year, you start to see a little bit of a gap between the elite players, and then you can see a gap down to the next players, and so you start to see that natural gap and where you can sort of bunch them up. So if I was using that practical example over Ola and Val, let me have a look at their averages. So Val averaged 72 last year and Olakau'atu averaged 69, so I would say they're pretty close on averages. I would I would still take Vow higher than Olaquato, but I think both of them are pretty much elite options in their position, and they're both deep positions.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think for me, I just really like to mix them up.
Yeah.
I think I've got as many CTWs in the top 30 as I do 2RF.
Yeah, same.
And I think it probably just comes down to when it's my turn to pick, maybe that round three, round four, who's the best available talent on deck when it presents itself. You know, I think at the moment I do have Val over Olu for that exact same reason. But
yeah,
the only other thing that you could sort of split them on is final straw.
Yeah.
You know, Val's pretty matchup proof, but he's got a shocker. Yeah. And Olaquato's got, you know, Tigers and the Bulldogs. So
they're tough. Yeah. That's very tough. What about Nakora and Gaga, is he asked about?
Yeah, look, I think on... I would say definitely Nakora in that sense,
just
because I think he presents really good base and a good final straw.
Yeah.
And the over upside Gagai,
as well. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. But I think, like, I've got Nakora probably as high as like 3 or 4 on 2RFs, whereas Gagai's maybe like sort of 8.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I'm very similar. But yeah, they're probably a little bit less than Gagai, as we talked about earlier.
Yep. And then one more final question. And this is one from Danny, who has asked, what's the best strategy for your bench? And this is from a draft rookie. But Steve, we'd love to get your thoughts. I think for me, there's probably two things that I look at. So one would be I favor duels.
Yeah, totally agree. Yeah.
Guys that I can sort of slot into a few different positions are really, really good, particularly if you've got a shallow bench, like a 4-man bench or something like that. And then the other thing that I sort of think about is just if there's just someone that I can't give up if they're amazing value, because you might be talking about you've got a full back, but say Jareem Bull is still on the board, you can pick him up, and then the guy who doesn't have one might come knocking, and you could get a trade out of it. So they're probably the two things that I think about, is positional coverage with duels, any crazy value, and then the final thing I didn't mention actually is probably just rotational players at center wing who I can play on matchups. Yeah. What about you?
I think in a perfect world, that's exactly what I would do as well. I'd look for duels, center wingers, and Torres that can rotate on matchups. One thing I do like to use with my bench, and I've had to do it this year, is if you're drafting and you've actually found yourself quite short on a position, like with me, I've got a fullback I've got to try and cover. I don't mind having a couple of fullbacks on my bench, and just to see how those first few rounds or trials play out, just to try and get a position that I'm quite skinny in, have some backup options, and try and get them later in the draft on my bench.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really good shout. And, you know, the example for me that I've done in mock is if I'm the guy who gets a Ben Hunt or a Jamal Fogarty,
yeah,
I'll probably reach a little bit earlier to get a Braden Trindle on my bench, just as positional cover and somewhere where I'm just not as confident. So, yeah, good shout.
Yeah, nice.
Nice, man. Well, look, that's it. It's been an absolute beast of a podcast. I thought it might have been. We had a lot to cover, but... Mate, it's been real. I know you've already gone through your main draft. We've got a second one actually coming up this Saturday night that we're both featuring in. So
each other. Yeah.
That's it. It'll be a bit of fun. We'll keep the subscribers up to date on how that sort of draft unfolds. But, mate, absolute pleasure to talk to you. Big as always. Thanks for your input.
Yeah, mate, I've loved it. I could do hours and hours of talking about draft, especially this time of year. It's perfect. So I hope everyone else has enjoyed it. But I've loved your company.
Yeah, thanks, Stevie, mate. You too. I hope all the listeners enjoy it. As I said before, subscribe to the SC Playbook podcast. Go to the website if you are a subscriber. There's more detail on all of these rankings and positions overall there. And if you've got any questions, hit us up in the WhatsApp. And most of all, enjoy your draft day. Good luck. Pick well. Stay calm. Any other words of advice?
Back your boys, the people that you think that are going to go well. Back your gut. Get them earlier rather than later.
Yeah, no, that's it. Good call. You always want to own the guys you like to watch. So yeah, that's it from us. So thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll speak to you soon.
Awesome. See ya.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.